Listen. Do you hear it? It's getting closer. Much closer. Don't be afraid. Be very, very afraid.
It's August 1988. The Writers Guild of America strike ends after 5 months. Top Gun, Die Hard, and Who Framed Roger Rabbit top the box office. Steve Winwood's Roll With It is the month's number one single, and Public Enemy stages a concert at Rikers Island Prison. But you don't care too much about all that because Dennis fucking Denver's from Second Period History is on the goddamn news. This whole free Dennis thing has become a movement here in the town. And local Ace reporter Janice Scuparoli wants the interview. And local Ace reporter Janice Scuparoli wants to interview you about your part in that night's events. Do you decline and hope this whole thing blows over? Or do you go for the jugular and take this opportunity to exact revenge with the most cutting weapon of all, the truth? Probably the second one, right? A proper revenge must be planned, though, so it's time to seek out the advice of the people who do it best, Hollywood. So you open up this month's issue and see what's cooking. Yes, it's time to
Listen to Sassy.
And now here are your hosts, Tara Ariano and Pamela Rubin.
I mean, when your name is Janice Scuparelli.
Scuparoli.
Excuse me. Either way, you're kind of forced to become a reporter.
Yeah, it is sort of weird that she ended up being a reporter there in town. But, you know, it's a good name for it.
Kate Winslet did just sign up to play her in the HBO adaptation of Fucking Dennis.
Good for her.
Yeah. Did you listen to the podcast? It was pretty good.
Hi, guys.
Hello.
Hi.
I had a dream this week that Casey Wilson was a friend of mine, and she announced that she was also going to start a competing sassy podcast, and I had to pretend I was okay with it.
So in our lives here in pop culture in August 88, Die Hard is in cinemas, and this is the first R-rated film that I managed to get into.
Mm-hmm.
And the way it works is we went to this, I'm going to say generously, don't give a shit, managed Western New York cinema, the Summit Park Mall cinemas.
Mm-hmm.
Management didn't give a shit. The 19-year-old manning the box office didn't give a shit. So me and my friend, we just walked in and we saw Die Hard. And Die Hard is still my gold standard for gun action adventure.
It's very good.
Yeah. Raiders of the Lost Ark being the gold standard for action adventure. And then the subgenre, gun action adventure, TME, Die Hard's the best.
It is my mom's Christmas movie.
Yeah, let's get into what now. First, we're going to talk about the pop culture items, starting with movies to look forward to. They lead with The Fly 2, starring Eric Stoltz. He gets the hero image in this. He also gets profiled later, a few issues after this, pegged to The Fly 2. I don't have the impression anyone thinks of The Fly 2 as a timeless classic.
I don't know.
I've never seen it.
Taste this and decide for yourself.
The Fly 2. Like father, like son.
Ooh, give me chills.
Yeah, it's one of those sequels that, like, no one came back for.
Yep.
That Eric Stoltz picture in What Now, I keep thinking, is Edward Scissorhands.
It looks like it with that hair, for
yeah.
sure.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I did not remember this movie existed until I opened this this copy and read it, and then I was like, I feel like maybe this movie was gross. That's what I remember. Not that the first one wasn't.
Right.
But I remember this one being like a different, they like, oh, they found a different way to be gross.
Mm-hmm.
And it was.
I think it would have done better at the box office if it was The Fly T-O-O.
Perhaps.
And they also, maybe, on the Stoltz train, highlight Haunted Summer, which really sounds like a Seinfeld movie title from one of those episodes where they all try to go to see a movie. And here is a taste of that from the trailer.
The story of poets Byron and Shelley and their summer of friendship. A summer that would forever change their lives. A summer the world would never forget. Philip Anglim, Laura Dern, Alice Krieger, Eric Stoltz, and Alex Winter. In a Von Passer film, Haunted Summer.
Boy, you just don't get those deep-throated guys anymore on these sort of films, do you?
No. This is another one I haven't seen, but I remember the existence of, and it's based on real historical events of all of these poets hanging out. And it was like when Mary Shelley came up with the idea for Frankenstein and wrote it, this one like particularly gloomy year in England, even more gloomy than the norm. So, yeah, that's Haunted Summer. One that it seems like I should have seen it because of all the cutie boys in it, but I somehow missed it. But it's on YouTube. We'll link it in the show notes.
So apparently this is actually one of the early Robin Hood scenarios where Hollywood was pumping out multiple stories at the same time. I dug this up. If you haven't seen it, I'll save you the trouble. Here's Siskel and Ebert on Haunted Summer.
Okay.
Haunted Summer comes close on the heels of Gothic, the hysterical and psychedelic movie of April 1987 by the tempestuous British director Ken Russell. This version of similar material was directed by the more thoughtful Ivan Passer, a Czech who has been working in America for the last 20 years. But both films have the same problem. They deal with the childish and perverse behavior of these characters without convincing us of their importance. Byron and Shelley were important, of course, and they still are, to me anyway, and to a lot of other people. But these movies prefer to see them as the first hippie flower children, and a little of that goes a long way.
A little of it does go a long way.
Ooh, burn.
So this is not a movie where Eric Stoltz kills everyone because it's a haunted summer.
I don't know. I haven't seen it. We'll have to watch it on YouTube and find out. They also highlight Prince of Pennsylvania, which we also found on YouTube and we'll link in the show notes, Pam.
I had this on VHS. Taped it from cable. Because Keanu's in this.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I watched 3 minutes of trying to find a clip, see if it was clip-worthy, which it wasn't. But there's a scene of Keanu going into like prom dance or something like that at the high school. And he's definitely channeling like every bad seed stereotype from like a Saved by the Bell type of show. Like he's not even drinking from the bottle properly. Like he's not convincing even as like a drunk, no good Nick. It was really painful to watch.
All right, you back off. Sorry, I'm very defensive of my Keanu's.
And then the last one they mentioned, sort of as a throwaway, is then check out Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, which is a comedy starring both Alex Winter, previously mentioned in this blurb, and Keanu. It's just funny, as Pam says in our notes, love it's just saying, and this other thing, I don't know, when it's that's the one that anyone remembers from this whole entire blurb.
Yeah.
Just going back to Prince of Pennsylvania for a second, they describe as funny / serious, which is funny because you would call that a dramedy now, but this is before the days we coined dramedy, and you had to say that mouthful. So good on whoever coined dramedy. Very useful.
It is. Next up, we have an item headlined Free Pee-wee. No, it has nothing to do with his infamous arrest, which in this timeline has not happened yet. It's about getting a free poster for Big Top Pee-wee, the less enjoyed follow-up to Pee-wee's Big Adventure. Also, another one where, I mean, he came back, but it was not directed by Tim Burton. It was directed by Randall What's-His-Face, who directed Grease and The Boy in the Plastic Bubble. That dude. The headline feels like a bad omen, knowing what we know now about his immediate future after this.
Yep.
Pee-wee.
Poor Pee-wee.
Indeed. Then we have a news flash from John Stamos's publicity people, quote, I thought we could arrange an interview and show off his new short haircut, which looks fabulous. And to be fair, and we'll put examples in the show notes, it definitely looks better than it did with shorter hair.
In this issue, generally, there's a lot of trying too hard with interview gimmicks and busting the fourth wall. Mm-hmm. I feel like if they interviewed John Stamos's hair it would have been quite at home in this issue. And probably more entertaining.
But you can tell they're still wrestling with the people they have to contact with. So they're like, I don't know, tell Sassy there's a new haircut. And they're like, what? So, yeah, it's unfortunate because you're right, Dave. I would have loved a little a PR clip from the locks on the floor. The lost locks.
The interview, it's like the two Stamos hairs. There's the one on his head and the locks on the floor, and they're having a conversation. It's sort of like Dinner for Five or, you know, Inside the Actor's Studio, except it's all about his hair.
What is your least favorite sound?
Scissors. Peek behind the curtain of hair journalism. If this were in the blog era, it would be an entire, like, 500-word post, because I can tell you from my Yahoo days, there's nothing that a site that pumps out tons and tons and tons of posts every day loves more than so-and-so changed their hair, so-and-so got a big chop, so-and-so went back to their natural color or changed it to something crazy. Like, hair coverage is weirdly big. I don't know why. And shout out to my friend Lindsay Robertson, who is definitely listening, because this is a beat she had to be on a lot, the hair beat. It's surprisingly prolific.
There were a shocking number of slideshows about John Stamos's hair alone on the internet.
True.
Some people are very invested.
Well, he's been famous for so long. Like, by the time he was even in this issue, he'd already been on a soap for a while. And he's still around. He's got a Disney Plus show this year. So, yeah, we've seen a lot of his hair. But he seems to have settled down into one signature style. And it's the right one. So on the next page, we have, Dear John Cryer, why isn't your new movie Dudes being released? I want to see it. Apparently it did come out, but it was directed by Penelope Spheer.
Hang on. Mm-hmm. That line just really feels like some sort of, whoever wrote that got a small stack of movie vouchers for their trouble. Like, this is, it's not quite payola, it's like couponola, you know? You put the C like a cent sign because it's very scandalous.
You don't think this is sincere?
No, I don't. Because here, listen to this trailer.
Hey, man, we're not looking for any trouble.
We are.
They're outsiders.
You know, maybe this wouldn't have happened if you'd look like normal folks.
In a place you won't find on any map.
Just let the cops handle it. Come on, you saw them. If we don't do anything, nobody will.
They were strangers.
You're just a couple of stupid punks playing cowboy.
In a land where legends are part of the landscape. Dudes.
It's Miller time.
You gotta love them. Take my hand.
And the guy who gets shot at the beginning of that clip is Flea from the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Right.
That's his original friend before, I guess, Daniel Roebuck steps in. Daniel Roebuck, I kind of feel like he's the kind of actor, he's a character actor. I think he was in Lost.
He was Arst. Mm-hmm.
That's
in
right.
The finale of season one.
I feel like he came out of the womb 36 years old and has been aging since. Like, he is perpetually middle age, no matter what age he is.
His mouth is never closed either. Fun fact.
That's true. Yeah, this it doesn't seem inspired, but I mean, the first part of it at least seems like it's trying to draft in after Lost Boys. Like, it has that kind of like semi-dangerous vibe minus the supernatural aspects. But yeah, I was not super inspired to see it, but Pam did a deep dive on it.
Well, because Pam was annoying about it when it came out. But like, there are two movies that I would drive my video stores nuts with, and it was Dudes, which I had the poster on my wall. And Ruben and Ed. Dudes has everything I would think I would like. It's a Penelope Spheer directed film, by the way. But like, Leaving is in it from Clue. And I also on the deep dive learned that Penelope Spheer's favorite John Cryer for the lead, but she considered Keanu Reeves. And I bet we all would know this movie better if it had been Keanu in this film.
Yeah.
Because it's got a real like Coen Brothers-y weirdo Repo Man-y kind of madcappy smashing it all together that soon we're fine with in a, like, it was a little ahead of its time, I think. Mm-hmm.
Well, it's on IMDb. You can watch it. It's free with ads. IMDb TV. We will link it in the show notes if anyone wants to do their own deep dive on Dudes. Can we agree the problem might have been that extremely generic, boring title?
Sure. Listen, the deep dive is interesting, by the way. You guys, John Cryer learned how to ride a horse and fire a gun and got his ear pierced because the script said he needed an earring. And then his ear piercing became infected. And I want to know, I would listen to the podcast about Dudes called Dudes, Where's My Dudes? Because the movie didn't get a wide release through a film distributor. And it was because there were so many different genres and tones in here that people weren't sure how to market it. And it just kind of went away. Yeah.
Sad. Speaking of sad, this item, Debbie Gibson plus Brian Robbins. Debbie Gibson, we know who she is. Brian Robbins was Eric on Head of the Class, speaking of mullets. And they include their ages. He's 24, she's 17. They're dating now, apparently, after he said on MTV when he was like guest VJing that he thought she was hot. Which, you know, it's not great. 7 years and she's a minor technically, but as we now know, he's not the noted perv in this equation. That's his disgraced former producing partner, Dan Schneider, and we will link that story in the show notes if you don't remember how that all went wrong.
So then there's another thing about heavy metal stars, and this time they're asking, why aren't there more female heavy metal stars? So the first thing they do is ask, of course, Nikki Sixx, who might be why there aren't more female heavy metal stars. To begin with. Nikki Sixx says, unless female heavy rockers start at a very young age and become very accomplished musicians, they won't be taken seriously. But I'd like there to be more female groups so we can take them out on the road with us. There's nothing like sleeping with the competition. So, you know, I guess they could have ended it there. But instead, they asked actual women. And they asked Lita Ford, and she says, because it would be difficult and not very natural for a sweet little girl to go to her parents and say, Mommy and Daddy, can I please have a wall of Marshall amps and an electric guitar? And, like mention the Runaways or something. Like, put her first. I'm so mad that she's like maybe they made her sound like a Barbie anyway.
This was not her best era. She was, like, trying to have a comeback at this time, and she was not taken seriously.
Kiss Me Deadly is still a very good song.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong. You can't take it away from anyone. But I will plug the Linda Lindas and Big Joni, both bands that I've been listening to lately. I cannot get enough of their vibe and their spirit. And they would have rocked every page of Sassy Magazine.
And lastly, for the pop culture portion of What Now? They got a little thing that Amnesty International is going to be putting on a concert series with a whole bunch of known entities. I went to this show. There was only like a handful of shows around the world. One of them was in Toronto at the Maple Leaf Gardens, and I saw it. Peter Gabriel, Sting, Bruce Springsteen, Tracy Chapman, Yasuo Yanur, and I think Katie Lang was like the special guest.
Sure.
Every area had like kind of a local guest. And the way I got tickets for this, because this was a hot ticket, because that's a pretty good lineup. We were talking last week about Pam sitting by the radio and dialing in to win trinkets and bebobs and whatever the hell she was going to get.
Boys, attention.
Right.
I'm sorry.
And I would not do that because that seemed like a real sort of low ROI prospect.
You got video games to play. You can't waste your time like that.
I got VIC-20 programs to debug. I got voodoo castles to get through. So what the local newspaper had a mail-in contest where you can get one entry per envelope that you sent in to the St. Catharines Standard newspaper, and they would do a draw, and I think there was like three sets of tickets up for grabs. I wrote probably about 50 letters, all different sized envelopes, some big color, you know, those neon envelopes, the Dayglo pink and green.
Sure.
Went downtown St. Catharines, stuck them all in the mail slot directly because I couldn't afford that many stamps, and I won. And then I said to my friend, all right, you can go, but you got to pay the like $4 or $5 in gas to Toronto. Then you can have this free $35 ticket. And he's like giving me guff. I'm like, well, then fuck off. You don't have to see it. And then he's like, here's $5.
You earned it.
I did earn it. It was like there's two things from my youth I remember winning. That was one of them. And the other one was second choice in the grade four school cake raffle. I don't know if all schools did these, but like twice a year, they would just have like people would make cakes. Usually it was like one really cool cake with some pop culture thing on it, another cake that looked good, and then there's a smaller cake, and those were the cakes. And I won second. You get your choice. And the first person went for the pop culture cake was half the size of the cake I got. I didn't care what was on it. I just wanted that delicious vanilla on vanilla cake. And I got it. And I was so happy. And I really felt like a big man on campus that day, walking around with my cake. I had no idea how I was going to get it home, though. And I don't remember how I got it home.
So you didn't win second place. I'm so confused. At first, I was like, you made cakes? You won a chance to be the second person to pick choice cakes. Therefore, you won second choice.
I won second choice, but I got the best cake, in my opinion.
Yes, because that was how you gamed the system. But what? How did you win the choice?
Oh, I don't remember.
I assume your number was called
there's
second.
Sort of, I remember.
Oh, it was a raffle. It was a raffle.
It was a raffle, but I don't remember by what mechanism you got to put entries into. I'm lost to time.
Dave, didn't you also win a trip to four to the Canary Islands when you were a kid?
I did. My mom did.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that was from the Scary Canary Round Tree Fun-Size Chocolate Bar Contest. Win a trip for a family of four to the Canary Islands. So my mom won, and she decided that my mom and dad would go, and that for whatever reason, I got to go, but not my sister. Maybe she was in school or something. So they decided to invite my grandmother, my mother's mother, and what a mistake that was. My best memory from that trip is I made a friend. There's like this it's a big we went to Tenerife, and it's a big English
vacation spot.
Yeah, vacation spot. And it was also during one of the World Cups. So nice. It was a little crazy. Anyways, I made friends with our next door neighbor, some English kid, and we would like, you know, do stuff in the neighborhood together, go to little electronic shops, play Galaxian in the lobby. And I went back up to the room, and I would knock on the door so my grandmother could let me back in the room. And I can see the eye hole close up because he's there. And she would just go, "Is your name Edward?" I'm like, "No, it's me. It's Dave, your grandson." And she didn't believe me. I was outside like, "Open, what's going to happen? Like, never mind that I am your blood and you don't know my voice. What is this other... I'm going to say 11-year-old English kid going to do to you? Is he going to like bust down your door and like take your purse and run away? Like, what is the scenario where you have to keep me outside in this hallway for 10 minutes while you run a background check or whatever's happening here?" That, and there was topless ladies down by the pool, and I was scared to go down there because there was topless ladies.
Because of their scary canaries.
Yeah, they're scary canaries out for all to see. Actually, those weren't canaries. They were boobies.
Yay! He did it. He did it. Sassy has a glossary word that they're trying to get us to take on, and I gotta tell you, I'm into this month's the crack. You gotta say it correctly. Mm-hmm. The crack. It's a noun meaning what's going on, the situation, or the scoop, commonly used by Irish teenagers. And Christina says here she has arbitrarily decided to spread it across America, used as in read Sassy every month and get the crack on music, movies, fashion. See, it's fun. World peace and the presidential election and all your latest ethical dilemmas. Caution used sparingly as non-hip persons may confuse the expression with crack, a seriously addictive drug. Sassy, always true to form. Fun fact, crack can get you addicted from the first thought of it. If you say Irish slang, you might accidentally get addicted to crack. Wear a condom. Take out your tampon. It's already killing you. Hey guys, the crack. Anyway, so it is a thing. I've never heard of it before, which is probably because I don't know much about Ireland. It just hasn't been in my life. But I guess over time, recently, they started spelling crack, C-R-A-I-C, like it's Gaelic in right. Ireland, and mostly at like touristy places. And people are like, no, it's crack, like C-R-A-C-K. That's just cut it out. Like, we did this. Stop touristing it. It's our word. fucking quit it. So that's the crack on crack.
So I always believe that all these on first glance are made up, and it's just like somebody at the 11th hour is like, oh shit, we need a glossary one. Daggy, let's do it.
That, I mean, that explains Groovox.
Yes.
We have an Irish person in the fold. So I texted our friend Quinn in Toronto, and I said, all right, you were a former Irish teen living in Dublin. Mm-hmm. Crack, 80s slang, a real thing? Or, like, I said, what's the crack on crack? And he knew what it was, and he said, yeah, that was a thing, but city people would look down on people in Ireland who said it. So it was a country bumpkin kind of glossary term.
Love it. Mm. Love it even
so
more now.
So just be careful where you use it. You know, don't try to impress the banker with your use of crack.
Would Bono say it?
No, I don't think Bono would
say
it.
He was from the city, I think.
Yeah. I think Bono's potato provider would say potato man.
You down with BPP?
His potato purveyor, I think, Bono's is what you meant.
No, just a provider. Just shoots them mashed potatoes right into his mouth right before he goes on stage.
Fuck, I need a potato provider.
I would. Yes.
So that's the crack on crack.
That's the crack on crack.
Crack. Ah. Oh, I started doing Scottish. Sorry.
It doesn't. Yeah, it happens.
Bye.
To
Bye.
The best of us. And finally, if you are in a numbers person like I am, and you have an old issue of Sassy in your hands, you're going, how come?
Well, it's confusing.
It's confusing. You're like, I'm on page 16 and page 25. What is going on? And it's because some lucky duck got the River Phoenix poster out of your Sassy magazine. So I'm sorry how much you spent on it. But if you were probably just outbidding me every time. And you and I spent too much on this issue. I couldn't find it. Tara couldn't find it. We tried to find it anywhere. And the closest I got was someone describing it on Worthopedia. It says River Phoenix as a babe on one side and an 8-month-old baby on the other. No wonder we can't find it. If you have a picture of this, please,
please
call the hotline with photos. Yeah. I don't know. Send it to us.
Email us.
I mean, I'll thank you with something. I think I missed my calling as a call-in talk show host. Just like, what time is it? Get up. School's starting. It's Prince's birthday. All right. Okay. That's it. Let's get out of here. Guys, let's go talk about some movies.
Watch it.
Watch it.
Movies.
Watch it. Hey.
Watch it.
Here's the gimmick this month. They've got guest reviewers in both Watch It and Listen Up, all celebrities, some of them celebrities in air quotes. So let's start with their hit of the month, which is The Year My Voice Broke, reviewed by previous One to Watcher, Alan Boyce. I think he was one of the four. This is an Australian movie I have not seen, but there's a picture in here of little baby Ben Mendelsohn, who I feel like made this movie and then no one in America heard of him again until he was in Bloodline. But he's like, looks like a teen, but he still looks the same. He's so cute. And Google still calls this his breakout role. And also in it, Noah Taylor, my medium age, what's his face from Shine? Can't remember the pianist's name, but that guy who I also love, the manager and Almost Famous. I've got to see this movie, but I looked it up. It's not, you can't rent it. It's not online in our region, and I'm furious about it. So if you know how I can watch The Year My Voice Broke, please tell me. We will link the trailer in the show notes because it sounds great. Next, we have The Blob, reviewed by Johnny Five, the fucking robot from Short Circuit.
Now you understand why it should have been John Stamos's hair interview. This is embarrassing, what you're about to describe.
I'm so mad. This review is so corny. We'll put the entire page in the show notes, but it's like, although I've been in two movies, I've never actually seen a movie before. Then Sassy sent me a dude screening of The Blob, and oh boy, talk about new input. Fuck off! I hate this so bad. that? What teen girl would like this? It's so stupid.
I actually had a lot of pictures of Johnny Number 5 on my wall because he was so shiny.
No, you didn't.
No, I didn't. Thank you. Thank you. I can't believe you didn't just believe that straight out. Thank you. You do love me. Okay.
It's so corny. I hate this. And I would also say I never thought robots started taking my jobs this long ago, but here they are. Reviewing movies instead of just being AIs telling me five things I need to know about some celebrity's new girlfriend. I've never seen The Blob. Johnny Five, air quotes, gave it 4 stars.
They are apologizing here, though, when they're like, just use your imagination a little. They're like, sorry, this is beneath every one of you. So his studio boss wrote it. What does that even mean? Who is Johnny Five's studio boss?
Sherry Lansing wrote this review. Finally, our bomb of the month is Willow, which Dave can weigh in on more cogently than I can because we did watch it recently, or should I say it was screened recently in our house, but one of us fell asleep. Me. I will say, because I don't have much to say about the movie, which made me go to sleep, this is the best written review. It's by Alex Winter. It's certainly much clearer and more descriptive and explains what he didn't like about the movie better than a lot of the reviews that are written by the regular writers of Sassy that I'm bitching about all the time. But what do you think, Dave? Do you agree with this? Would you call Willow a bomb?
Yeah, it wasn't good. It was, I don't understand why they're making a new series out of this. It's got to be just fueled by nostalgia. Like those movies you saw when you were a kid, and every movie is the best movie, and the greatest thing on earth is the last movie you saw. That has got to be where this Willow nostalgia is coming from, because this movie, everything he says is true, except for the part where we need George Lucas back directing because he's got stuff. Like, he directed one movie that was good. It was the first one, and that movie was made in the editing room, not in the direction. So maybe that part of it, not so true, but his observation, like, Ron Howard has too light of a touch for a movie like this, I think is spot on. Mm-hmm. Very fluffy and slow and not as funny as it needed to be or thought it was.
Yep.
Can I just say to Alex Winter, because I know now you're listening because we've mentioned you enough times, Alex, when you got this issue and you were reading it, did you have that thing that happens when you do your work right and correctly and you work hard and then you're like, everybody else just phone this fucking thing in? There's like a robot. I didn't have to even see the movie. I broke plans and then I stayed up late on Tuesday because everybody said, no, Alex, you got to get in. I'm so mad on Alex Winter's behalf.
Who doesn't like sitting under a big willow tree? Ron Howard knocked it out of the park. As the light dies on the day.
Yeah, he used the word amalgamates. Alex Winter tried.
Here's his closer. It's as if George Lucas remade one of Japanese director Akira Kurosawa's epic samurai films as a Disney Sunday movie. Bam! He drops the mic. But you know, when they got this review originally, they were like, make it like 150 words. And his original came in at like 3,000 words. And they were like, oh, fuck.
Yes, even more. I'm angrier for Alex Winter's first draft. TM, I just TM'd that title, Alex Winter's first draft, because I'm going to read it and I'm going to make that film. I'm armisening. Tara, did they ever do this again?
Is the implication here?
We're going to do this again for Listen Up, where it's reviewed by other people. Is this the only issue where they do this?
I don't recall.
God, this is great. I know it's trying on someone who does this professionally. I understand. I like it. It makes me feel like we're hanging with cool people watching movies. Where they're telling us, like, oh.
Sorry, hang on a sec. Janice Scooparoli here with a hot scoop of the day. David T. Cole from Austin, Texas seems to have found the River Phoenix 8-month-year-old poster image, which is now available in your Zoom chat.
Ooh,
it is very cute.
Cute baby alert.
He's very cute.
Look at him. I remember this picture. He's got such a dirty face because they just let him run around naked in the mud, giving him any name he wanted. He's so cute. Sorry, that's the official moment of silence you have to have after any time you see a picture of River Phoenix. Hey, listen up.
Okay.
Hey.
Yeah?
Listen up.
Okay.
Listen up. Hey.
I am.
Listen up.
As mentioned earlier, these are also guest reviews. All different people except for one. Alex Winter returns to say that Boogie Down Productions, By All Means Necessary, is a hit.
Yes, I think very deeply. I think very deeply. I think very deeply.
Alex Winter, good on you for doing your job that they asked you to do. And I'm offended on your behalf again that clearly they were all supposed to do some musics too. And then they're like, I don't want anything.
What was that? What did they do?
I didn't say anything. I had juice to drink. I didn't listen. That album's long. I didn't listen.
All of these are people that either, except Andy McCluskey, I think. Amanda Peterson has a full profile coming up. Annabeth Gish, same, I believe. So these are all people that they were already talking to. So I assume that's when Johnny Depp was approached to do his review. But anyway, the Alex Winter album review, not as tight as the movie review, and really just very try hard. There's a lot of white person talking about music by a black band energy coming through this, where it's calm down.
It was 3 a.m. He had left it all on the floor with Willow.
Yeah. Well,
he was exhausted.
Fair enough.
And then Pam just like only cared about Alex Winter for the rest of her life. It got real weird. It got real. He asked her to stop, like in person. She wouldn't. Next, we have Iggy Pop, Instinct, reviewed by Johnny Depp. I'll take it from here. He definitely wrote this. This is so, I don't know if you've read any of Johnny Depp's writing, but it is what you think it's going to be. Well, like, close your eyes, picture Johnny Depp writing you a Post-it or a grocery list. That's it. He wrote it. And he's just, you know, defending Iggy Pop to the point where he's just like, you wouldn't even have David Bowie without him. And that I was like, that seems not possible. And so I went and looked, and Iggy Pop was like, no, like David Bowie like saved my life and my career. And like, I didn't even know what I was fucked up. And this guy came in because he's a genius from outer space and was like, I got it. And then like made me huge again. Please. That's also a movie I'd like to see. So I gave some links we can put in the show notes, and then please contact me and let's make this film together. I mean, I guess if it's Johnny Depp.
Well, they already kind of did in Velvet Goldmine.
That's true. That's true. But how many people here know that? That don't mean here in our room, but I mean like we haven't talked about Velvet Goldmine yet, but you're right. Let me go add that immediately to the playlist that I made for you guys, because if you don't know Velvet Goldmine, let me just give you a song or two in here. It's so good. But that could get a remake, don't you think?
Mm-hmm. And then to Pam's point, we have Sam Phillips' The Indestructible Wow, reviewed by Annabeth Gish, and Thomas Dolby, Aliens Ate My Buick, reviewed by Amanda Peterson. I'm going to just pair up the girls because they both could have used a heavier hand in the editing. This does not do them any favors. That it's just both of them are like, it was good. I liked it. Like very lazy, read the back of the book review quality to both of these reviews, which really don't tell me much. But when I was doing my shallow dive on this, I learned that before this, Sam Phillips was known as Leslie Phillips, and she was a Christian rock artist. So this was a big departure for her. Does not come up in Annabeth Gist's review. Oh boy. Then we have One to Watch. And this One to Watch is, I'm sad to say, our first deceased one to watch. It is Rodney Harvey. At the time that they're profiling him, he had just been in a movie called Mixed Blood, which is in pieces on YouTube. We'll link it. And Five Corners, which is on Daily Motion. And Salsa, a salsa dancing movie. And Spike of Bensonhurst he was in. That was on, that one's on Facebook Watch. And then, so anyway, all of these are available. He later played Soda Pop in the Outsiders TV show, which Pam claims was her creation.
It came out of my brain. I used to read The Outsiders so many times that I eventually put myself in it. And when I would read it, and I was a character who was Dallas's little sister, and I went with Ponyboy and Johnny. The story I ended up telling Essie Hinton one day, and she looked at me and said, have you ever heard of fan fiction? And I was like, no, wait, that's not what I meant. But when I was a kid and then this show came out, they put a girl in the show and her name was Scout and she hung out with them. And I was like, I could do this. And by that, I meant put myself in The Outsider somehow. Mm-hmm. I'm still trying.
Yep.
Essie Hinton did sign my book, Stay Gold. That's it. That's the end of that. Yeah. I will always find an Outsider segue when I can.
And back to Rodney, he sadly died of a heroin overdose 10 years after this in 1998. He had started using heroin while making My Own Private Idaho. I kind of expected a controversy tab on the My Own Private Idaho Wikipedia entry, given that it seems in retrospect to have been cursed. See also previously mentioned River Phoenix, but there isn't one. However, I did find a short item about his death called The Curse of Idaho at Empire.com, which we will link.
And I, when I read that, I had just on my own, like randomly bought this one sheet of My Own Private Idaho off eBay. And now I'm afraid to open it because I didn't know there might be curses, but I have had a weird couple of days since this has arrived. So, I'm not going to open it. Call the hotline and tell me what I should do.
So we only have one feature, pop culture-wise, this month. It is titled, Lou Diamond Phillips, Don't Sit Home Waiting for His Call, by Christina. This is basically just the story of how this story didn't come together because she was waiting for a phone interview with him because he's, you know, on location shooting something, and he never does actually get in touch with her until, so finally her publicist is like, just give me the questions and I'll ask him, which like sounds real sketchy, but that's as close as we get to Lou Diamond Phillips in this story.
Even in the picture, he's like, no, like, first of all, I don't know where they got this picture that they sent in to Sassy.
This is just
nobody
a press
from
shot.
Sassy.
Yeah.
Yes. It's a terrible one. These are officially the worst jeans. These are the worst jeans, and they have made bajillions of jeans. Mm-hmm. Bajillions you can buy right now on eBay. Like, the internet is waiting to sell you a bajillion jeans. You will not find a dumber pair of jeans than these.
Every other ad in this issue is for a different jean brand, and these are by far the worst.
These jeans are horrible. The fly is terrible. Like, every choice worse than the last.
Yeah, they're bad. But I love that Christina's, her main worry, or so she portrays, is this was probably grounds for being fired, or worse, taken off the cute boy beat. Is there any worse fate? Definitely not. But anyway, for the facts that she does get out of it, he's on location in Montana. It seems to have been Waiting for Salazar, ended up being released the next year as Disorganized Crime, which is on YouTube. We'll link it. He also mentions his wife, Julie Cypher, who famously went on to leave him 2 years after this for Melissa Etheridge, which was very scandalous at the time. And then he married some other ladies and had some troubles with them, which we may or may not link in the show notes, but he's got a little bit of a checkered past in terms of treating his wives nicely.
Are you not going to say he remains it? Yes.
Well, that's what I was getting to. She asks about pets, and he says he has a cat named Tansy, and he does remain a noted online cat dad. This is like one of the few facts I somehow still knew about him in the present day. He's on Twitter, and he tweets pictures of him and his cats all the time. So, you know, those are cuter than the domestic violence charges. I'll just say that.
The more that the article went on and that this was all hinging on LDP's contact, I was like, when, just tell me who the second interview is that you've got set up, because I like the B story of Carney Wilson's online too. And you're just like, I can't just ask her these questions. I haven't written the Carney questions yet. And they're like, Carney's publicist says she's at the photo shoot right now. At Lou Diamond Phillips's photo shoot, she's wearing better jeans, that's for sure. I mean, because this is when the publicist would be like, I also represent these people that right. I want to get in your magazine. Why isn't this happening? Because I'd like to know that part, too, where she's like, but I held firm to LDP because that's what everybody wants.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, Lou Diamond Phillips makes comic books now and graphic novels. And his wife, I think, or at least the his wife, I believe, is his illustrator. And in the article that I read, he was like, she didn't even want to do any of this. I forced her. So I don't know. He seems like there's a lot going on inside the mind of Lou Diamond Phillips. He likes it when you keep your questions unanswered. What's wrong?
He likes it, or his publicity agent who dropped the ball and answered on his behalf?
That's how you handle it. You just go, I'll answer the questions from here, Lou. Yeah. But anyway, Lou's a writer and a screenwriter, and he made a book, a steampunk Star Wars meets Romeo and Juliet, called The Tinderbox, Soldier of Indira.
Fast.
It's set on war. Doesn't this sound like
colon six sun, a galaxy's lament.
This is Lou Diamond Phillips pushing me away. Mission accomplished.
Yes.
No
it's
interest.
That moment. When you're like, oh, I'm not going to date him. It's like, I'm working on this thing set on warring planets propelled by a prophecy. It's a love story and a series of power plays from which not every character will emerge unscathed. And you're like, nope. The princess of Mono's name is Allegra. She dreams of a life outside her father's compound. Nope. And maybe this is your jam. And you're like, Pam, stop talking about it in that way. But I don't think I am. I think I'm saying it correctly.
Honestly, this sounds like the backstory from Bad Ronald. Crazy Ronald, who paints his whole fantasy world on the room he lives in. Lou Diamond Phillips, what's the first movie that comes to mind when you hear Lou Diamond Phillips?
La Bamba.
Yeah. La Bamba.
Okay, why is it that I always think of The First Power as the Lou Diamond Phillips movie? I saw it once. I couldn't tell you anything about it except the box art has a pentagram on it.
Ooh,
and
it sure
that
does.
Is the movie I associate with Lou Diamond Phillips. Even though, like, you know, I've seen Young Guns a few times. I enjoyed it at the time. We've talked about it on this podcast. The First Power. It's sort of like, I think it's his Ninth Gate, to put it in Pamela Ribbon's terms.
Thank you. Yes. It's got a bit of a, it has an exorcist-y attempt at the look on the poster. I think it's, you remember it because it was like maybe prime Blockbuster Video time for you. And they thought this thing was going to take off. And so there were 800 unrented copies of The First Power whenever you went to the video store. And, you know, that's it.
Yeah.
This was on a lot. It was also on cable a lot, I think.
Well, rest in peace, Lou Diamond Phillips.
Next time, we're talking about the fashion, beauty, and magazine-y topics of the August 1988 issue. Get ready to go back to school with spreads on plaid, denim, and dressing like you just stepped out of Crybaby. Change up your eyeglass frames. Find out what happens when the sassy staffers try to do one another's jobs and make product tests a whole new feature. Tons of ads we haven't already seen in previous issues, and so much more!
Yay!
For my plug this week, we may have thought TV was dumb in the 80s, but no one can be that smug about it when idiotic game shows like TBS's The Cube exist. I reviewed it for Primetimer, and we will link that in the show notes.
You can find me at the Great American Pop Culture Quiz Show. We've just started season 4, so get in on it at the start. USAQuizShow.com. You can follow me on Instagram at David T. Cole, also at Starlog Jam. You can follow Tara, Twitter, Instagram, at Tara Ariano. Pam is at Pam Oliver, been everywhere. And, of course, the show right here that you're listening to, at Listen to Sassy, on every social network in the world, if you just count Twitter and Instagram. As always, please rate and review us on the podcast app of your choice. It really helps us out.
Yeah, you can call us. Also, our hotline is 720-SASSY-GO. Please leave us a voicemail about the show or the magazine or, you know, how you think about River Phoenix on a Tuesday, and we may play it on a future episode. You can find more information about the podcast, visual aids for all of our episodes, quizzes, and more at listentosassy.com. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Dudes!
Famous online dude.
Is it prom season already? He beat me out for prom king in high school, and every year he calls to rub it in. John! Good to hear from you. Yes, I do remember that. Yeah, you won all right. Say hi to Rebecca for me. Okay, sure. I will. Okay, yeah. Oh, huh? Stay off! No! There goes my whole day! Stamos! Damn him in his jet black hair, winning smile! Oh, I'm a failure! A failure! I'm so disorganized! I never call anyone back!
You should see my car, it's a mess! I'm a mess!
I go to the submarine sandwich restaurant and I leave my submarine sandwich restaurant value card at home every time! Oh, I want a free sandwich! Steve-O!